The Colbrin. 2. The Book of Gleanings. Being writings from various old Qaldi books, which were partially destroyed in ancient times. Chapter 12. The Rule of Usura. Usura gathered his sons about him and spoke to them thus. These are the days of the dawnlight, and I am the dawnlighter from beyond Basharug. I am the torchbearer for the God of Gods. These are the laws which I made for my people in the land of Tuwar, the laws of one speaking with the mouth of the God above all gods. He who places a spear or arrow within a dead body shall be accursed, and his hand and arm will become things of evil. They will swell up and become consumed by fire. Likewise shall be accursed who looses these weapons against another, but if it be a man of Tamuri who looses the weapons, then he shall die by them himself, for he is beyond the reach of the curse. A tree that reaches up above twice the height of a man shall not be stricken for burning or to take away its land. But if it be dedicated to the Ads and is then used by a craftsman in wood, then it may be stricken and cut. Trees are not things to be lightly dealt with, for they move the winds which cross the face of the earth and generate these in great forests of the north and south. The slaughter of a tree is no less wrong than the slaughter of an ox or a sheep, for the same breath of life is in each. Therefore, never bring them low wantonly. Are not trees held sacred by the people of this land? Is it not more reasonable to dedicate a mighty tree or a grove of trees to a god than a mute stone or object cut from wood? Therefore, when Usura moved among the people, he did not forbid them their grave groves, nor did he silence the words of the women who tended them. But Usura said, "These things are for women and not for men, let the women bide, but men should follow the callings of men, and their place is not among the grave groves." Now, when Usura came among the people, they dwelt away from the river, fearing the god of moving waters who molested them at night. But Usura bound the god of moving waters, so he no longer troubled the people. Then Usura bade them build their dwelling places beside the moving waters, decreeing that none should dwell beside still waters unless the still waters be filled with the life of fishes. In those days men sought to appease the formless ones and the spirits of the night with offerings and worship. But Usura forbade them this, and he surrounded the whole land with a protective wall which no dark spirit could penetrate, while all those within were dissolved. Every dark spirit being neither male nor female, and every dark spirit which clothed itself in the shape of a beast or bird was bound and cast back into the place of darkness. All men who were blood kindred with the beasts of the forest or with fowl or with serpent, dwelt together according to their kinship, and were divided thereby. Usura forbade them not their kinship, but did forbid the rule of blood. He spoke to the people in this manner. Great are the ties of that thing which binds men together and joins them with their forefathers, but greater still is each man in himself, his destiny lying within himself alone and not within his kindred. Man is not a drop of water in the stream of life, but a fish that swims within the stream. Yet insofar as these things have ever been, the 24 great kinships shall remain secured in their establishment. Before the coming of Usura, a man could not take to wife a woman of his own blood, but Usura redeemed the land with blood, safeguarding it against barrenness. So henceforth men could take wives from among their own blood kindred, and the land remained fruitful. This, the spirit of life, became strong among men, for it was not spread out to become diluted and weakened. Until Usura came, none in this land knew of Hoku, and it filled men with fear and awe, but Usura revealed all its secrets to his sons, and the secrets are known even in these days. Hoku is that which sustains the Dawn Dwellers. It is but thinly spread throughout the earth, and before the days of Usura men could gather it, storing it in stones and in sacred objects. It may be drawn upon by the spirits of men, as women draw water from a well. It is Hoku which bestows fertility, causing flocks to multiply and crops to increase. Its secrets are known by the twice-born. Though in the days of his distress Usura called upon his father in Kanagmahu, he forbade his sons to call upon him likewise, for Usura was their father on earth and their advocate in the hall of admission. Therefore, none can call upon him with impunity, for if he dealt with them he would neglect his task among the Dawn Dwellers. Nor is any man justified in calling upon the spirit of a departed one, for they are beyond concern for the everyday affairs of men. When the sons of Yusra had established their rule over the people, the leaders of the people came to Yusra desiring to make him their king, so he would rule over them. But when they came before him, Yusra replied to their wish in this manner: I am the mouth of the God of gods and the light of my people. I will be the father of your king and the director of his footsteps, but your king I cannot be, for I am dedicated in service to the God of gods. Saying this, Yusra then took his son, who was grown to manhood, and led him forth by the hand, giving him to the people to be their king. Later, while the leaders and governors of the people still remained gathered after the anointing of their king, Yusra spoke to them as the mouth of God. He said, To judge justly between man and man is one of the greatest obligations of a king and those who stand in his place. So from this day hence judgment shall not be given by those who sit under the trees, listening to the words whispered among the leaves. However, if three men sit far apart and each gives a like judgment, the words from their mouths being the same, then the judgment shall be good. However, if it is a matter where a life can be forfeit or property taken away, a family divided or a man or woman enslaved, then judgment shall be given only by the king or by one who wears his mantle and bears his burden. Sacred waters are living waters filled with the power of Hoku and shall no longer be used for any purpose other than sanctification and purification. No longer shall they be used to decide whether a wife be guilty of adultery, henceforth she shall be tested by the bitter draught alone. He who eats the flesh of swine shall be accursed, for to eat the flesh of swine is to eat something dedicated to the fathers of men and an abomination. Flesh of the ass shall not be eaten, for it diminishes the vigor of men. Henceforth, the bodies of the dead shall not be broken or burnt, for the hokah within them departs with the Lord of the body. Therefore, nothing can be added unto a victorious one by rendering up the essence of his earthly mantle through the flames of the fire. The people shall not be denied their feasts, nor shall they be forbidden the rituals of fruitfulness. Their offerings to any god shall not be taken away. As the gods of the people are today, so shall they remain, for they serve their end. They may depict their gods after their own fashion, for the likeness of such gods is of small consequence. But the likeness of the God of gods shall not be fashioned by any man, for he is beyond the understanding of men. No man shall seek to find his likeness in water. The festival to the God who draws up the land is not to be denied the people, but no longer shall they eat the flesh of asses, for now this is forbidden. The days for the feast of the forefathers shall not be diminished, lest the gift of long life be thereby curtailed. With them alone is the distribution of the life forces and in their keeping are the powers granting fertility and good fortune. Unto those who control the sprouting of calm, the increase of herds and the harvests of fishes, the potency of men and the fertility of women, success in hunting and victory in war shall be given all due honor and worship. He who causes injury or death, sickness or suffering by drawing the likeness of another in sand and piercing it with a fire-hardened stick, or who makes the likeness of another in wax to burn in the fire, or in clay to be pierced by stake or thorn, is henceforth accursed. He will be delivered to the lukim of disease or death. He shall be accursed who mixes living grain with fat to enslave the earthshade of another man or woman. He shall be accursed who calls up the nightshade of another or the night frightener. All who are so accursed will be delivered to the lukim of sickness or shall become the prey of formless ones. It is not wrong to make an image of a breast child, that a woman may conceive, but to make the hinous of a man's private organ so that a woman may conceive, is wrong, and any woman making or lying with such a likeness shall be accursed. She who is so accursed will be delivered to the lukim of sickness and pain. When Yusra came up into Harfanti he found their people with strange customs which displeased him, but he forbade them none except those which were evil in the sight of the God of gods. While there he laid a great curse upon any who transgressed his laws. These were words spoken through the mouth of Yusra, which he caused to be recorded. Henceforth, no maiden shall be enclosed in bark and kept in darkness for 7 days before marriage, but she may be kept in seclusion among women. If she has to be purified, it must be done with water and not with fire. A woman shall never be mutilated to purge her wickedness. Henceforth, the private parts of young women shall not be sewn up to preserve their maidenhood. This shall remain in their own keeping and in the keeping of the young women's kindred in good faith and trust. To sew or cut the private parts of any woman is a great wickedness, for this is the portal of life and woman is not an unworthy guardian. It is best that women remain maidens, until their marriage day, of their own free will and choice, but if, because of the maiden's weakness, this seems doubtful, then the obligation shall be on her kindred. The custom of the habs-hasti whereby the legs of young women are bound together, after which young men may enter their chamber to lie with them, is a thing of wickedness and no longer permitted. Now, if any man discover the nakedness of a maiden, he shall not go unpunished. Man shall not see the nakedness of woman in childbirth, even though the woman be biswife. The hut of childbirth and all within its circle is a place forbidden unto men. Henceforth, no woman shall be suspended at childbirth. If the wife of a hunter he with another man while her husband is absent so that he be slain or wounded during the hunt, then no wrong is done if her husband or the kindred of her husband slay her. Neither shall it be cause for blood slaying if the kindred or husband slay he who lay with her. The foreskin of a man is cut to defy the lukum of impotency. This is not forbidden to the people, but they shall not preserve the foreskin in fat and use it to endow stones with hokku. The binding of foreskins is forbidden. Yosuro laid the greatest of all curses upon those who captured and enslaved the lord of the body belonging to another. Since that day none has done so and lived. He also laid a curse upon women who baked their newborn children and ate them because of the barrenness of the land. He also cursed the chief of the women's kindred. Before times, that which grew to fullness within the wombs of cattle and sheep was sustenance for men alone, but when the beast cast it forth before its day it became sustenance appointed for women. Yosuro forbade this and cursed all that came forth from the womb of beast before its time. Yosuro had these things recorded in Yapu. No child shall be slain willfully, saying, our God has denied it proper sustenance. Above all gods is the God of gods who is the God of life and they who proclaim these things proclaim a falsehood against him. Yet they shall not be accursed until after the day when they have heard the laws of the God of gods spoken unto them. Before then they have been led astray by those who should guide them, and on the leaders shall be the curse. Henceforth, the empty body shall not be bound tight against itself, but stretched out, for the earthly body cannot be reborn when once its lord has departed. The people shall not be forbidden the carrying of it, nor shall they be stopped from elevating it, but it shall not be hung over the living waters, lest it call forth a formless one in the darkness of the night. If the kindred of a man come up to molest him at night, the nightshade shall be bound by the power of hokku transmitted into a hollow log filled with fire-retaining substances. The log will then be burnt in purifying fire and the ashes buried after the fashion of your fathers, but the hokku shall not be given back. That hokku which comes from a man whose crops and trees yield abundantly is best. The spirit of the life of men does not dwell in the moving waters and therefore it cannot enter into a woman from the waters, neither does her own water bear it up from the ground. Even as a tree springs out from a single seed and the barley from a single grain, so is it with the seed of men. That which forms within the womb of woman is not built up from many outpourings of man, once will suffice. If the blood of a woman be not stopped, then she carry no child, for the life within is blood of her blood. No man shall fashion the likeness of any beast to lay with it so that his flocks and herds be increased, for henceforth he who does so, and all his beasts, shall be accursed so they sicken and perish. Nor shall any man spill his seed into an object of wood or stone and bury it. If he does so, then be he accursed, so that he is forever molested by the nightshades of terror. It is foolishness to resort to the charmers who make likenesses of beasts so their kind may be brought to the arrow and spear. Unless he who seeks the wild beasts be empowered with the hokku gathered by the kindred of his habitation, not can guide his steps or strengthen his arm, neither will his eye see keenly. The success of the hunter is not to be found with the charmers, but lies in the goodness and uprightness of the kindred within his habitation. If a woman take seed from a young man and deliver it to the charmers so that barrenness be removed from her, then she, and the youth, and if she bear any children they also, shall be accursed. The young man will be seized by the lukum which feasts on the hearts of men, and the woman by those which tear open the bowels. It is an abomination in the sight of the God of gods for men to devour themselves, and all who do shall be accursed. Those who would devour themselves for the sake of their God may instead make an offering of their foreskin, and this will be acceptable by any God. The prayer of thankfulness that they are not born women shall be made at the time of sacrifice upon the altar. The excreta of man and woman shall never be left exposed to the eyes of anyone, nor in a place where its smell can come to the nostrils. Nor shall anyone pass water where another can smell it, for they whose nostrils the smell enters thereby gain power over the other. The smell from human waste draws up the formless lambda which afflict men and women at night and turn their bowels to water. No offering of meat shall be eaten raw. It shall be roasted before a fire and the bones pounded into flour and eaten with meal. If the offering be consumed within a dwelling place, then the blood which has been spared must be smeared upon the doorposts, so that the dark shades of the night haunters and the death bringers be repulsed by the power of life. It is the duty of a son to provide sustenance for a departed one who was his mother or his father, and he shall not neglect his brother or his sister or any of his kinsfolk who lack children. If he be neglectful of his duty, he shall not escape molestation by the earth shades of the departed ones, which will wander relentlessly until satisfied. If formless ones be called forth by neglect so that they reach stability on earth, they will haunt the dark watches of the night and suck life-filled blood to sustain their awful forms. No man may keep them from his dwelling, for they will slide in stealthily even as snakes. It is wrong for charmers to call forth dark spirits. Any charmer so doing within the borders of the enlightened land shall be accursed, so he be seized by the night fiend. If such be done, and the dark spirits wander out of control, then one of the twice born shall be called upon to return them to their dark abode. It is not sufficient for men to shun the ways of wickedness, for unless the Lord of the body be clothed in brightness, they who watch for him in the land of the dawning will wait in vain. Those who lack that which would bring them into the place of light will fall prey to the lords of the dark places and be forever lost to those who love them. All those who are awakeners of the dead shall be accursed and delivered to the lukum of madness. If any of my people deal with them, then they too shall be accursed so that they become prey to the terrors of the night. It is futile to consult the departed ones, for what can they do but advise on matters of little import? If they have anything of importance to impart, they will come unbidden to men of understanding and made it known. When Yusra came with his sons and those with them into the true land of Tamura, he strove with the people of Kantayamtu who followed the ways of wickedness and ignorance. He remained among the people of Tamarua during the days of Gavu, dwelling at the place where now stands the temple of the Skyseer, in an abode of reeds, by the moving waters. In those days the people of earth united themselves with those who were in the land of morning light by the powers within the body of a woman child, seeking in this manner to preserve the hoku of their kindred. When Yusra saw the wickedness of the custom, he placed a great curse upon all the land and upon those who split the body of a woman child, so that her flesh cried out from within them. Therefore, the land became stricken with a great plague. Since then never has anyone in the enlightened lands eaten the flesh of man or woman, and no woman child is violated in the great wickedness of ignorance. The people of Tamura greatly feared the curse of Yusra. Yusra taught the people that the power of Hoku resided not in the flesh of the body but in the bones, and that each bone contained the essence of all the being, man and woman. Then the people began to seek union with the departed ones in the land of the morning light, by the power of the bones, and Yusra forbade this not, though he knew it was futile. But where there was healing in the bones and they were able to draw it forth, Yusra was not displeased, for all things pertaining to the good of the people were well in his sight. Nevertheless, he forbade to women the burden of the bones of their husbands, and since then no shades has risen to molest them. This was because of the protecting power which he drew forth to fill all the land. It relieved the women of their burden, raising it from their backs. All the charmers who brought forth shades from the land of dawning and all the questioners of the dead and the awakeners of the dead were cursed, and this curse hovers over the land even to this day. Yet there are still some who seek to call forth a shade from the swathed body made eternal, but all they raise up is an ill-omened messenger from the place of darkness. Yosura did not forbid to the people the rites of homage due to their departed kinsfolk, for in the place of mourning light these were the powers most interested in the welfare of any mortal man. Yosura never forbade anything that was to the benefit of men, taking away naught but the things which were futile or harmful. In those days there were no rites of written record, but Yosura caused them to be given to the people. Not so that these should renew life in the departed ones upon earth, but so that the Lord of the body should be sustained and strengthened in the place of the morning light by the link of Hoku, sacrificed by those remaining on earth. Yosura spoke to the people, giving them laws which were recorded in this manner. These are words of the God of gods who created man and beast upon the sacred island. No beast shall be mated with another not of its kind, and if this happen, then both shall be slain and their bodies burnt. If this be done with the permission of a man, that man will be accursed. Neither shall any beast be yoked together with another not of its own kind. During the first year of its life no beast shall be made to take up the burden of man. When Yosura came to King Busus he found there a man of the Hestabwes bound and prepared for sacrifice, and he cried out against the deed but none gave ear to his word. So, standing off, Yosura placed a staff of power upright into the ground and danced around it, singing the song for drawing forth the spirit. When they saw this, the people were wroth against him and called upon their charmers to curse him so he departed from the earth. Their curses were ineffective and when one charmer approached the dance ring of Yosura, Yosura called forth a tongue of flame which consumed the charmer. Then the people became afraid and fled. So Yosura released the man who was bound upon the place of sacrifice, but he was not yet whole. Yosura also cursed all those who offered the Hestabwes as a sacrifice to their gods, since that day no man of the Hestabwes was ever slain upon the altars. Yosura did not curse the charmers of that place, instead he called them to him and gave them dominion over the dark spirits which left their abode to wander earth, molesting men in their habitation. Thus the charmers became greater in the eyes of the people, and from that day onward they have cleansed the land of all dark spirits. However, Yosura forbade them the calling forth of the Lord of the body from any man so that he became the servant of another, and he placed a great curse upon any charmer who disobeyed this law. Yet this is done even now, but those who transgress the laws of Yosura do not escape the awful fate due to them, for his power is yet potent in the lands of his people. When the transgressors stand before him in awful judgment, their deeds will witness against them. Yosura forbade those who sat in judgment the right to judge men by the fat of crocodiles or by the horn or skin. Instead he revealed to them the manner of making judgment through corn and by the burning sword. He also taught them how to brew drink which loosened the bonds from the tongues of men, so that truth was no longer restrained. The people dwelling among the trees, along the banks of the moving waters, lived in fear of tree apes. They held these sacred and would never harm them. They believed that these tree apes snatched the departing lord of the body and ate it, that they lurked in wait to catch it in a mighty unseen net. So Yosura went about cursing the food reserved for the tree apes so that it became fire in their bellies, causing the life within them to come up as foam out of their mouths. Thus the land was freed from fear of the tree apes, and henceforth the departed ones have gone in peace, no longer being molested by the tree apes. Chapter 13. The Way of Yosura. Yosura taught that within each man resides a little man who is the lord of the body, and this is the life of men. While man sleeps the little man wanders abroad to journey as it will, at death departing from him forever. The lord of the body cannot be seen by mortal eyes, but it is not hidden from all-seeing eyes of the twice-born. When departing at death it comes out from the mortal mouth, waiting a while until it grows celestial wings. Then it flies away to the western kingdom where the wings are shed. In the place whither it journeys the lord of the body needs no earth-made abode, therefore burning the earthly habitations of a departed one is futile. However, if the habitation remains and it is not purified, it becomes the gathering place for shades arising from the place of darkness, for the habitation need not be destroyed, it must be purified by incense and water and refilled with protective hoku. If a man come upon another asleep, the sleeper must be awakened quietly and with gentleness, so the Lord of the body may re-enter peacefully. For if the sleeper be awakened before it has re-entered, or if it jump back in fright, then the man will become sick. Therefore, when awakening a sleeper, it is well to call gently to the being without. When the mortal body becomes sickened without the heat of the lukim being present, or if the man or woman be seized and tormented by the dark spirits of madness, this may be caused by the day's leaping of the Lord of the body. Thus, if the Lord of the body be awakened from its day's leaping, or restored from its restlessness, then the man or woman may be cured. These things Yosura permitted to be done after the fashion of charmers. Yosura taught the curing of many kinds of ills within the mortal body and the use of draughts containing the life of herbs and growing things. He used fire to stop life leaving the mortal body. The manner of effecting these things is written in the Book of Medications. When Yosura came with his sons into the land of Tamura, the people there dwelt in darkness and they were ignorant of all knowledge. They were divided among themselves into many kindreds, and strife was frequent. They had no kings and only the old men ruled. There were many charmers who ruled the people by delusions and also those called the keepers of customs and the teller of tales. One people dwelt among great trees and thick forests in the midst of swamplands. Their habitations were made of reeds and stood upon high platforms. These people were called the children of Panheta, for he was their god in the days following those during which men were first created in the midst of the waters. Another people dwelt beyond reach of the waters and away from the trees, and they were nameless. They dug holes for their habitations or sought abodes in caves within the hillsides. This people had no gods but worshipped the dark spirits and the kamawam of the forest which seized men at night. When the men who had been seized returned to their kindred, they were without words, being dumb. They died in the midst of madness, tearing at their bodies. But there was no kamawam in the forest, this madness being the work of charmers wishing to instill fear into the hearts of men. This is the manner in which it was brought about. When the charmers seized men at night, they took them to a secret place where their tongues were pierced well back with thin thorns. Thus the tongue swelled up, so they whose tongues were so pierced lost the power of speech. The charmers also pierced the victims about the waist with slivers of wood, so none could discover where they were inserted. They drove other splinters into them at the bridge between the private parts and the rear channel, and none could discover them there and know the victim was pierced with thorns and splinters. Yosura cursed all the charmers who practiced this evil with a great curse, so they were driven to madness by a demon which ate away their bellies. Since then the kamawam has been known no more in the land. Yosura taught men to beat metal out of stones and to burn stones, so that they gave up their heart. He taught men to work with clay and he taught them the weaving of cloth and the making of beer. When Yosura came into the land, the people knew not about the cutting of water channels and the sowing of kam, but Yosura taught them these things. It was he who brought fertility to the land, it was he who died in the midst of the waters to give them life, and his life is in them still. Therefore, it was through the spirit of the Great One who died in the days of old that the soil became fruitful. Beyond the reach of the living waters which rise and fall like the chest of a breathing man, the land is dead. It remains barren like a woman who has not known a man. It was known even to the men of old that if the land was not refreshed with the living waters but with other waters, then its increase would diminish from year to year until it became waste. The increase within the soil comes not from water alone but from the life within the water. Life comes forth from life, and that which has not life cannot beget life. Therefore, the good land is that which is married to the threefold God, and land not so married remains barren. The married land is covered with the rising waters, but the land not married is ignored by them. These things were written concerning the children of Panheta. Yosura spoke with Panheta as man speaks to man, therefore the laws of the Inta were not changed, remaining to bind alike those of them who dwelt on the soil or dwelt on the sand. If any man went among the Inta, their laws became his laws, and if any woman left the people to dwell among the Inta, she became even as they and might not return. Even as the sun spirit journeys on a road set between the stars, so does the spirit of man journey with the movement of the waters. Therefore, when a man dies, his body shall be buried lengthwise with the great river. Even as the land upon which things grow belongs to the kindred whose blood is within it, so shall no man own to himself alone anything growing up from it, whether it be grass or herb or tree. But each man and woman may take of every herb and fruit as much as can be gathered in the hands and eaten before sunsetting. Of all things which are a seed and can be eaten, each one may gather for themselves as much as can be stored within a jar or suspended from the food pole. All things which are a seed and can be eaten but which are not stored in a jar or suspended from a food pole, shall be stored in the pit of the kindred. Nothing shall be placed within the pit unless it has been heated by fire and cooled. Even as the spirit of life resides in the things which men eat, so does it reside in the living things from whence they came. Therefore, any tree or bush bearing the food of men shall not be cut or broken. The blood of beasts cries from the soil even as does the blood of men, therefore, if shed it must be appeased. Slay no beast unless it be needed for food, and bury the head and whatever comes out of its belly. Every other part which is taken shall be eaten or burned, except for the bones and the skin which are to be used. Fire serves man, but it can also become his master. Consider its nature. Does it spring out of the wood unbidden or of its own volition, or does it require the agency of man? Does it reside in the wood or is there a fire spirit? Only the fools among men start something which they cannot control. Never let a fire grow into a thing of much smoke, keep it bright, using no more wood than is needful for the purpose. Let it not stray from its proper place, which is the place where it serves without menace. When they become of an age to do so, every man and woman should take themselves a mate. Those who fail to do so are not held in the highest esteem. By the things whereby a man commits a wrong, so shall he be punished. Likewise, he shall be dealt with according to the nature of the wrong. The customs from times past are not unhelpful guides. When Yusura came to the place where the Inta dwelt, they made him welcome in this manner: "When we saw you, our hearts were gladdened. The life was renewed in us, and though content as we were, you brought refreshment and joy." Yusura called these people his unweaned children. Chapter 14. The Tribulations of Yusura. These things were written in the book of the two roads. Yusura, hoy therein called Yoshura, came from beyond the realm of Athor and was the first king of Tehamut. He established the festivals of the new moon, the festival of wool drawing and the days of devotion. When first he brightened this land by his presence, the welfare of its people was in the hands of false priests who taught that man was a double-spirited being in whom the spirit of good struggled with the spirit of evil for possession of his soul. Each deed and thought was said to strengthen one or other of the opponents. The people were not completely deceived in accepting this. It is perhaps an earthly distortion of reflected truth, but neither is it wholly true. In the days of old, men saw truth but dimly, for it could be only partially revealed in accordance with their ability to understand it. Truth is a light growing even brighter in the darkness of man's ignorance, and as the generations pass and go down into dust, men see more clearly. Each light bearer dispels a little more darkness, and Yusura was a light bearer, the greatest of them all. Before Yusura came, bearing the lamp of brilliant light, truth was but dimly perceived in this land. The false priests of those days taught that when the great God created man, he held back immortality as a special gift for those whom he favored. This is not the attitude of one who is great, and therefore such doctrine cannot be accepted. That these priests were misled themselves was not so great an evil as their misleading of others who trusted them. A true priest should approach as close as possible to the shrine of truth and interpret whatever he sees there as clearly as his ability and the understanding of his followers permit. In those olden days, no man had yet been reborn to wisdom and enlightenment. Therefore, nothing was known about the gardens of light, and men believed in the dark abode alone. This dark abode was a place where sand and dust were the sustenance of the dead whose bodies were clothed in long hair and feathers. Men, in those olden days, knew little more than that. They also believed that souls risen to glory really consumed the food and wore the garments and ornaments provided for their use. They did not know, as we do, that as the soul is subtle itself, so can it use not but the subtle elements of earthly things. Even now incense is burned before the statues of those risen to glory, so that they may receive their portion. There are those who believe that the sustenance of the soul, and its continued life, depends upon the monthly communion sacrifice of its kinsmen on earth. As a man who walks with a lamp at night is attacked by those who lurk in the darkness, so are enlighteners who seek to bring light into the gloom of ignorance attacked by those whom it would reveal in their true likeness. Thus, when Yusra cried out against those who, while not permitting the slaying of men and women in their daily lives, nevertheless allowed a child to be slain as sacrifice, or buried beneath the pillars they raised up, he was condemned as an enemy of the gods. When Yusra was in the land far up the river of life, one named Ajala who stood close to the right hand of Yusra slew a man who was kindred to the leopard. This enraged the god of these people, for the slain man's blood cried out to him. Therefore, men of the leopard came into the land of the east seeking to slay Ajala for his offense against their god, but he had withdrawn to a place of hiding. So when they found their search to be in vain, the men of the leopard returned to their place, informing their priests of their failure. The priests then held the rituals for calling down the war power, drawing it down in strength. Then, because Yusra was the overlord of Ajala, the men of the leopard went forth against him, claiming the right of war. But in the night, when the hostile host waited before the camp of Yusra, the war priest defiled himself, and so the war power failed to make faint the hearts of those with Yusra, the war priest having lost control over it. Thus, the war power came into the hands of Yusra and he cast it back so it fell upon the men of the leopard, and their knees were loosened and their bowels went to water, and they fled from that place. The men of the leopard dwelt within the forests, towards the sunsetting side of the moving waters, and Yusra pursued them there. He did not enter the thick forest, but, coming to an island in the midst of the waters, he made camp there. He had a prisoner whom he released, sending him to the priests with this message: "Come in peace, that I may hear your complaint and judge whether it be just." But the priests of the men of the leopard came down only to the edge of the waters and would go no further, and they called out across the waters, "What was just heretofore is just no longer, for this is now a matter to be settled between our kindred and those who are with you, for blood still cries out for blood." Hearing this, Yusra answered, "Let us be wise, there are judges above us, so let the god of the moving waters decide the matter." To Diaz the priests said, "It is well." Then Yusra took Ajala into a boat, rowing him through the waters against the south wind. Stopping the boat, Yusra commanded Ajala to leap into the waters so he might be tested by swimming, and this Ajala did. He swam powerfully and the god of the moving waters did not take him, for Yusra had covered the waters with his power, so the waters bore up the swimmer, carrying him in safety to the shore. Then Yusra sat down with the chiefs of the men of the leopard and made a covenant with them and with other peoples likewise. This was that when a man slays another among his own kindred, none among them shall protect him, and he shall be either slain or cut off from those of his own blood. However, if the slain man be of a kindred different to that of the slayer, then the slayer may be slain by men of either kindred. If the kindred of the slayer would avoid the toll of blood, then they must send a token to the kindred of the slain man, together with an account of the deed. They must also agree that the blood be upon their own heads and revenge in their hands, and account of such revenge shall be sent to the kindred of the slain man together with their forfeiture. Then all the kindred bound themselves with a great oath, declaring that if blood cried out from the ground in vain, then the night terrors and bloodshades would be called upon to fall upon the kindred of the slayer and not upon the kindred of the slain. It was at the time when this covenant was made that Yusra spoke in this manner to his sons: "These are the meats which are accursed and shall not be eaten. All the meat of any beast which dies of itself. All the meat of any beast which has been slain as a sacrifice to the small gods. All the meat of any beast which has been slain by wild beasts, and all meat which has been offered up on the doorstones. These are unclean meats." When Yusra had gone throughout the land and purified it, and bound up its wickedness with curses, he taught those who dwelt there the making of waterways. He also instructed them in the meanings of the heavenly signs. He built Pisti in the midst of the reedlands and drained the swamps. Then he raised up the first temple of brick and stone. At this time he established those who were recorders of the days and seasons. While Yusuro was at Paisti, the priests stirred up the people against him, and so he fled to the land of God with his sons and blood kindred. But his wife and youngest son did not go with him, for they were with her father in the land from whence the great river flowed. This was the land of Kantoyamtu, where priests taught that death is not the normal lot of man. These priests said that though their forefathers of old were just as mortal as men, their forefathers' fathers were heirs to immortality on earth. This is an erroneous teaching, one belonging to the childhood of man, but later men were taught that death is just the departure of life which takes flight with the soul. While Yusuro was at Paisti, his true son, Manindu, commanded the Masiti who were a host of men and workers in brass. They subdued the whole land, returning it to Yusura. Later it was delivered into the hands of Manindu, whose seal is on it even yet. After the time of Manindu the people forgot the God of gods, for he appeared distant from them, and they worshipped other gods whom the priests devised. The light was dimmed and only poorly reflected in small hidden shrines.